Hello, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. So happy, as always, to be here with all of you. We've got a really good class today, juicy one, cultivating self-love. Before we get there, just a couple of pieces. So first of all, it's July now. This is our last month of Sacred Depths. I don't know how we got here all at the same time. It's very, like, 2020 has been like the year that's gone on forever. We've been together for a long time, but at the same time, it feels like it's flown by. I can't believe that we are we're in our final month and in our final calls. Let's make this last month count. We were together a lot this month, every week, and our last week we're together for a double session, which you're going to love and get so much out of. Make sure you've got our calls on your calendar. It's a little bit more to keep up this month because we do have so many calls together, so much time together, but let's really, really make it count. I just want to take a look at the calendar because on July 21st, which is in 2 weeks from today, we have a practicum. So hopefully you guys remember our first practicum. Stephanie coached and Maggie was coached. We're going to do another one of those. I had asked for volunteers. I've got a coach for the 21st, but I need a volunteer. So if you would like to volunteer to be coached on that day for our practicum, please let me know. It's an incredible opportunity to get coaching, not just from whoever is going to coach you, but really from me and our whole group, since, you know, we all give our opinions on that call. So just message me, email me, let me know if you'd like to volunteer to be the client for the 21st. The other thing I wanted to just briefly mention is a number of you have asked how long our Facebook group is going to remain open. What I usually find is that if I leave the Facebook group open for too long, it just kind of peters out. And so I usually leave it open for about 2 weeks beyond our last call. So it'll remain open through August 14th. So any questions that you have, if you're still looking for extra partner hours, you know, any of that stuff, just make sure that you do it. And if you want to do it in the Facebook group before the 14th, of course you have all of the recordings, all of the bonuses, all of the worksheets forever, or as long as I keep the membership site up, which I anticipate it being up for a very, very, very long time. So you don't have to worry about any of that, but just any kind of questions that you have, just know that the Facebook group will be open through August 14th. All right. So our call today, as I said, is about cultivating self-love for ourselves and to support this for our clients. And the first question that I just wanted to take a look at is, why are we even exploring this, self-love, in a practitioner training program? Because really, you're not going to find this topic in any other coach training program, practitioner training program pulled out, you know, on its own. There's like 100 different reasons why we look at this in Sacred Depths, but I want to just name a few. You probably know this already, but it's important to, you know, just repeat it and take it in on a deeper level. So first of all, self-love is a vital component to either achieving whatever goal you have self-love is important, like it needs to be there. Or some of us can achieve goals without self-love in place, but it doesn't feel good, right? It's like you achieve, but you're not happy or satisfied or fulfilled. So without self-love, it's usually hard to support a client who's stuck. Self-love in one way or another is almost always going to be part of the antidote to moving past the stuck place to reach the goal. And then, again, for clients who know how to achieve without self-love, we want to use self-love as a tool so that they can learn how to be kind to themselves as they achieve, so that they can feel more fulfilled as they achieve. It's very rare that a client is going to come to a call and you'll ask them at the beginning of the call, what's your intention? And they're going to say, well, I just don't love myself enough, and so my intention for this call is to cultivate self-love, right? I mean, it could happen, but chances are, you know, it's going to be very rare that that's what a client is going to, on the surface, come to a call with. But that's why it's actually, this call is even more important, because for sacred depth practitioner, like a truly transformational practitioner, you want self-love to be top of mind as an issue, as a topic, as a component, as a layer, as a tool when clients come to you when they're stuck with their goals or not feeling happy or satisfied or overworking or, you know, whatever it is. There's a piece that you're going to want to create awareness on when appropriate. It's not going to be immediately apparent to the client. It's a piece that you're going to, when appropriate, want to work with clients on. So all this being said, what I'm going to say next is also obvious, but it needs to be said. In order to support our clients to cultivate self-love, in order to even spot that part of what a client needs is to cultivate self-love, as practitioners, we need to love ourselves. Our ability to support another human being to cultivate self-love is related to our ability to love ourselves. Now, that doesn't mean that if you are someone who, you know, has a long way to go with this topic that you can't hold space for others, but you want to be in the process of working on it. You want to be aware of it. You want to be in process with it. The other piece that's just important to say as we step into this is that the journey towards self-love is a journey, right? It's a process. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon, except in very rare cases. I can count maybe once or twice where I've just seen the flip switch fully, you know, in an instant to self-love. It's like miraculous, right, when that happens. This is, it's not meant to be a flipped switch and then a miracle. This is like, self-love is like life work. You know, it's life work. And I speak this from a very human place for myself. You know, I've worked over the decades so much on self-love. I teach about it. And still, there's always more work for me to do on this topic. In fact, I'll tell you guys a quick funny story. So you guys know I'm Virgo crazy organized person for the most part. And anyway, our curriculum for this program for Sacred Depths, you know, I type everything out. I have everything in files on the computer. Like at least once every year I actually like copy, I improve the curriculum a little bit and then I copy it into a new file, all the things. Everything is always in place. Well, wouldn't you know it, a couple days ago when I went to pull today's class on self-love, there were no files to be found anywhere on this class. And thank goodness I keep all of my notebooks. I always, whenever I originally put a curriculum together, I can't do it straight onto the computer. I have to be away from the computer and just, you know, handwrite all of the ideas that come through. And thank goodness I keep all of those old notebooks. I was able to find the notebook with a lot of the details of today's curriculum, and I spent a couple of hours, you know, basically rewriting and getting all into all of the nooks and crannies of today's curriculum for you. I'm actually really excited about it. The reason why I'm telling you this story, though, is because it was such a sign to me, right? Like I always see signs from the universe, and it was like, you know, I couldn't just easy, quick, pull, print, you know, do a little editing onto the curriculum for this one. It was like the universe saying, hey, Joanna, like you need to spend a couple of hours right now swimming in self-love. You know, you really need a tune-up in this moment, you know, on this topic. And it was perfect because last week, you guys know, you know, I presented all of our next steps options last Thursday, and it was great. And by the way, so many of you have stepped in, and my heart is so full. I'm so excited. And, you know, it's like the special rate goes until Thursday, and of course, anytime I present next steps, because it's continuing clients, like that's where my self-love stuff comes up, is like, you know, and I know, of course, I know beyond all of this, my rational mind does, but like, you know, my ego and my fear, like, oh, if they don't sign up, they don't love me, you know, like all the things, right? It like really picks at my self-love stuff, and I get a little, I do, like, full transparency, I get a little anxious about it. So it was, like, perfect antidote to have to go through the curriculum for you specifically for this class. And again, as I was saying, such a reminder that this isn't once and done work. It's a journey. And I think particularly the self-love work, it's a lifelong journey. So what is self-love? So I have my own definition of self-love. And what I'll say is what I've come to learn over the years is that self-love is a living, breathing entity. It continuously evolves. So what my definition of self-love is today is different than it was 2 years ago, is different than it was 10 years ago. So I'm actually not going to define it for you because it's personal. I want you to define it for yourself. So take a moment right now and journal on it. Define self-love for you. What does self-love mean for you in this moment in your life? In this time in your life. Why is it important for you to cultivate in general, but right now in your life, why is it important for you to cultivate self-love? What have you been holding back from or struggling with because of not enough self-love? What have you been holding back from or struggling with because of not enough self-love? And one last question for right now. Actually, I want to give you another 30 seconds on the last one. I feel like I didn't give you enough time on it. What have you been holding back from or struggling with because of not enough self-love? And then last question for right now, I want you to pick one person. If you're working with clients, you can pick a client. Or if not, think of a family member or a friend or a colleague. And whoever you've picked, assess them from your coaching perspective, from your transformational practitioner perspective. Why is it important for that individual to cultivate self-love? And what have they been holding back from or struggling with because of not enough self-love? I'll just do like a little case example, right? So pick a client or somebody else in your life. Why is it important for that person to get to the next level of self-love, cultivating it? And what have they been struggling with because of not enough? All right, let's pause here for a moment. This is really just the beginning, but I want to hear from a couple of you. What's coming through? What's your definition of self-love, or what are you seeing so far? Star two. And don't be shy. We're an intimate group today, so raise your hand. Is this Emily?
Yeah, hello.
Hi.
Oh, I just love this topic and want to hide from it. So, a lot of things are coming through me, you know, personally, and, you know, self-love for me, my definition is accepting all of me, flaws and all, right?
Yeah.
Showing up with love and encouragement and grace when things don't go my way.
Yeah.
And how often I forget that, right? Especially when I'm stepping in, and why is it important right now? Because I'm moving into my business full time, because I'm doing all these things that need me to have so much immense self-love that, yeah, it's just really resonating. So huge.
Yeah, I can feel, like, even beyond the words, and I love your definitions, but I can feel, Emily, even beyond the words, like something is hitting you energetically. Like, not that it's new, but it's opening you up to something that you've really needed to remember and activate for yourself right now.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Joe.
Oh, hey.
Hi.
Hi. So what I noticed is that I get inconsistent. Like, there's like this whole shame cycle that happens. And
what kind of cycle? I didn't hear the word before cycle.
Oh, shame, like a shame cycle.
Oh, it's, yeah.
Kind of a, which I'm guessing is that it's the same as, you know, not cultivating self-love.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just noticed that it caused me to just shrink and go into more of this, like, very, like, safety, just doing, you know, just things that can keep me safe. Like, my breath, I can actually feel my brain shift. Like,
yeah.
That it's like I can't take anything in. I mean, I can take a little bit in, but it's just really like reptilian.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah.
I'm glad you're bringing this up because, you know, what I'm about to say isn't foolproof, but you can see, like, most of the time this is true. When there's not enough self-love, one of two things usually happen. Either you play it safe or you do reckless things. It's like the two extremes. And it feels like for you, when there's not enough self-love and then the shame gets activated, it really works to just kind of keep you thinking small, feeling small, acting small, and not taking those stretchier actions to help you get to where you want to go.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And even though I know that's what's going on, I don't want to say I can't break out of it, but it is just like it's not working. Like, it doesn't, the things don't, I'm like detached. There's a definite disconnect. Like, even I know, take this step that moving towards that, it just, it's like I'm disassociated from it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's part of the resistance. You know, it's like you go into the fear place when there isn't the self-love, and one of the things is then you disconnect from it. So this goes back to, you know, what you're bringing forward, Sho, goes back to Wheel of Self-Sabotage.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want to recommend this for you, like, just knowing kind of some of the ways that you operate. Number one, to see if you can, there's an outer and inner component, and this is just a good refresher for everybody. Number one, see if you can, on an outer level, take the actions anyway, which I know sometimes you do, right?
Mm-hmm.
But see if you can break that cycle, even though you're feeling small, take the stretchy action anyway, even if it really activates, you know, as much as you can handle, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the other piece that's important, and this is almost harder than taking the stretchy action to stick with, but this goes back to persistence and consistency and the difference between breakthrough or awareness and transformation, because you have so much awareness, Cho, like, you know yourself so well, it's incredible, is to consistently, at least for a couple of weeks, to really engage with the part of you that is shaming, to really actively and intentionally engage with the part of yourself that doesn't, you know, isn't loving yourself, isn't accepting, and we'll get into other pieces today, but I don't, the awareness isn't, and especially for where you are at, mm-hmm. where it's so deeply, you know, ingrained. And I say this not from a pedestal, I say this because I know it from my own experience. You want to, you know, use befriend your fear, use rewiring, but not once, persistently, to unburden those parts of yourself that are really just protecting you.
Mm. Yeah, and I know that, okay, so there's this one part where it's, so like a, when I'm in a good state, and it's literally like kind of a mindset, I can just move, like boom, do it, like get it out, do it, and then have the results. But once it flips, the resistance that it like it's this thing that grips, and even though I know it's like the more I push it, the more it resists.
Right, which is why I'm saying, and there isn't even like a breakthrough question I can ask you on this. What's next for you is that persistent and consistent engaging with those parts.
Yeah, and I think it has to be small things because the more I'm like I'm going to go after it, the more it like
it yeah. does. It can be small stretches, but persistent dialoguing and engaging with the parts. We can if you have more questions on this show,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
ask me separately. But I think you know what
yeah.
I mean. But yeah, I'm glad you're bringing it up.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to take a couple more of these shares. They're so good. Linda.
Hi. So I was interested to see that the definition of self-love that I came up with is the same one that I used for self-esteem when I used to teach self-esteem workshops.
Uh-huh.
The definition is knowing my intrinsic worth as a person and acting from that knowledge.
Yes. We're going to get more into that also. So you guys are all such smarty pants. You're ahead of me. But why is that? Why is it important that it's coming up now? It feels like there's something important, and especially since you're making the connection with the self-esteem, which sounds like it's a little surprising for you.
I guess because so growing up, I think so much of my worth came from doing, and
yeah.
now, you know, with things that are going on in my life and also the quarantine, I'm not able to be the doing thing. Like, so,
yeah.
like, it was always more around skill-based and, you know,
yeah.
self-confidence and all of that rather than intrinsic worth. So, you know, you're valuable because of what you do or what you own or who you know or what you're producing. And
yeah.
so I think that's coming up now because, you know, I'm not, for various reasons, not able to produce the way I was producing before.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And my sense, and tell me if I'm getting this right, is that this is coming up right now, too, because I know that you understand all of this intellectually, your inherent intrinsic worth, which is not attached to doing or producing, but I think you're in a place where you're ready to take it beyond just the cognitive understanding into really feeling it and integrating it on a deeper level.
Yeah, it's a lifelong journey, right? You know, I mean, it's layers of the onion. It really never ends.
Yeah. It's true.
Oh, yes.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to take one more. Christine.
Hi, I'm so glad you've picked me because it's something I need to voice. I just think if I voice it, then I'm making headway. So my definition is that self-love is unconditional acceptance of all of me, confidence to venture into my shadow, shed light, and commit to live fully despite my shadow. And the reason why that's so important is because I want to step out and to serve the world, and my ego should not get in the way. So there we go.
Yeah. I love it. Is there a better word than should at the very end?
won't. Can I say won't? Will not?
Yeah.
Okay.
100%.
Yeah.
Part of what I'm hearing in that, first of all, I hear it in the energy of your voice. You're so ready. But and then part of what I'm hearing in there is this understanding that self-love is not just loving your shiny parts, but loving fully all of your parts.
Yes. Yeah. That's the commitment I'm making to myself. So I'm so glad you gave me a chance to voice it.
I'm so glad too. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. I'm going to keep on going because we've still got a lot to do, but we'll have other opportunities for more sharing. Hold on one sec. Let me just make sure okay. So, as we have been saying, even when you are evolved, spiritified, coachified, therapized, etc., there are always areas of improvement around self-love. There are always more places to go. So why? Why is that? Well, some of the answers you guys have already mentioned, but I want to just lay this out. This is really important kind of underpinnings to understand yourself as well as your clients. Number one, because culture, and when I say culture, I mean culture, parents, religious system, you know, any kinds of systems, etc., because culture doesn't prioritize self-love. Culture, as Linda said, culture prioritizes devoting time and energy to achievement and productivity, but not time and energy to self-love, because culture tells you that you're valuable and you're worthy if you produce and if you achieve, but it doesn't tell you that you're inherently worthy simply because you are a living being, that you are worthy and worthy of love and self-love because of your mere existence. Existence isn't mere, right? Period. End of story. There are other reasons why this is a lifelong thing and why it's like always more work to do on self-love, because dominant culture has a very explicit, narrow and biased view of what is lovable, beautiful, and worthy. I'm going to say this again. I know it's nothing that you don't already know, but it's like it's so baked in to our belief system without us realizing it. And I just want to pull it out and call it out and call it out. Because dominant culture has a very explicit, narrow and biased view of what is lovable, beautiful, and worthy. And that explicit, narrow, and biased view, by and large, was shaped by white, rich, Christian, cisgender, able-bodied men. What we generally live with, as without even thinking about it, as, you know, this is worthy and this isn't worthy, was totally made up by white, rich, Christian, cisgender, able-bodied men. It is biased, and it is baked into our being if we don't consistently call it out. Another reason is because culture is full of hierarchical thinking. When you're taught that any type of person or any type of characteristic or personality trait or ability is less than or more than, then you're going and you apply and you project that hierarchical thinking out into the world, you're going to also project it inwards towards yourself. This is a piece of shadow, right? So in other words, if, I'm just going to make this up as an example, if you apply hierarchical thinking to menial labor, right, even without overtly doing it, but if there is any part of you in your mind that says someone that does menial labor, as an example, or someone that doesn't get straight A's, or, you know, whatever it is, if there's a hierarchy, you're better than that, then you're also applying hierarchical thinking to yourself, and there are going to be tons of places where you end up on the bottom of the totem pole for yourself, or the bottom of the pole for yourself, excuse me. Another reason why self-love is, you know, there's so much work to do is because culture tells you that your ex, insert something negative for ex, full of yourself, selfish, a fool, whatever it is, culture has shaped your beliefs if you think highly of yourself or love yourself, right? You're full of yourself if you love yourself. You're a fool if you love yourself. And, like, there's this messaging in our culture in general that's impossible because it basically says there's something wrong with you if you don't have self-confidence or self-love, but make sure that you don't have too much of it. Another reason why self-love is one of those kind of oftentimes like those lifelong things and there's always more layers to it is because if you've experienced any kind of trauma, it can stand in the way of self-love. And in a way, all of us, some of us have experienced personal trauma, but collectively we have experienced trauma. And then finally, because of modeling from our parents, how we saw our parents treat themselves, even if they sent a different message to us, dictated how we feel about ourselves. So all that being said, let me ask you another set of questions. What are the ways that you haven't been loving yourself? What are the ways that you haven't been loving yourself? This is just for you. Just an honest look, even if you've done a ton of self-love work and have come really far, look at where you're at now. look at the things that you say to yourself as well as the what you do and the ways that you treat yourself. So what are the things that you say to yourself that haven't been loving? What are the ways that you treat yourself that haven't been loving? Next question, in what ways are you tolerating others not fully loving or valuing you? In what ways are you tolerating other people not fully loving or valuing you? And if you've done a lot of self-love work over the years, this one you may find, this is the place where you may find the most improvement, right? But look through with a fine-tooth comb, see if there are any, there may be some little places. Next question. So, of course, I know, you know, if you're here, I know that on the surface and probably a few levels, layers, even beneath the surface, you believe wholeheartedly in the importance of self-love. But considering just some of the pieces that we've looked at, some of those cultural pieces or modeling pieces or other, whatever comes to mind, what are some of the below the surface beliefs that you have when it comes to self-love? What are some of the below the surface beliefs about self-love or about loving yourself? Question is similar to the one I just asked, but it might yield some other things. What have you been taught about being lovable? What have you been taught about being lovable? And then last question for now. How have you been taught to not love others? And this goes back to this shadow piece. It's like we can't love ourselves if we don't love others. We can't love others if we don't love ourselves. They are intricately tied together. So just be honest with yourself. How have you been taught to not love others? And also, I guess along with that, you know, how are you not loving others? All right, so let's pause here. Let's hear a couple of shares that are coming through. What's coming up for you? What are you seeing? What's important here so far? Star two. Vicki.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I think just having the questions, period, are bringing up a lot. So thank you for that. I think the one that kind of just stands out that I'll speak about is how have you been taught to not love others? That was always an interesting thing because it was always, in a way, it felt like I was being told to love myself more than I love someone else, but it's in direct conflict with to be loved, I must be agreeable, nice, and soft-spoken.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So thank you for these questions because... Yeah. It's good to unpack it, I would say, for myself.
Yeah, I can feel that as you're speaking. I feel like a lot is moving, and you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing a lot of pieces. What I want to just ask you one question: what has the impact of twisting yourself to always be agreeable had on your life?
It came about probably within the past few years. I'm 38 now, where I'm just tired of it, and it's brought up just anger about it. Like, why am I so nice? Why? Like, and it's just the people pleasing, and it got to a point where I just wanted to just get away from people and only be to myself for a while. And I guess the biggest impact is just sharing and just opening up to people has been really hard for me, a challenge. And it takes time. I would say years for me to like build new friendships and even like build a better relationship, a deeper relationship with my partner. So, yeah.
If you haven't started leaning into just being present to your anger, I want to really, invite you to do that. Really get to know your anger.
Okay.
because I would imagine that, you know, all of those years of being agreeable, there's a lot of kind of pent up energy in mm-hmm. there.
Yeah, I would say that's true because there was a period where it felt like 2 years where I was really angry and blaming and just trying to not be in that place where I thought I was over it, and then something comes up and it's like, no, so thank you for leaning in, because I don't know that I fully leaned into it and just being present to it.
Yeah, you can create a sacred container for it. Just journal from your angry place. That's one of the easiest ways to do it, just to be with it, to engage with it in a way where you're showing that you're paying attention and you're just letting the energy move through your body. See, and you'll probably a lot of awareness will come through, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Christine R. This time.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay, where to start here? Ways that I have not been loving myself is in not accepting an understanding of my limitations, both those that are perceived and those that are actual. And along with that goes a focusing on where I'm not measuring up yet, instead of focusing on where I am. Which I am working on. In what ways am I tolerating others not fully loving or valuing me? Discounted pricing was the first thing that came up. And that in itself is like the discounted pricing, and I can feel feelings of sort of a resentment towards clients that, you know, sort of, you know, demand discounted pricing because it's my not loving myself that caves into the demand.
That opening and,
right? It's like, then I get angry at myself. So then there's the beating myself up. There's the lack of self-love there. So that's a really complex one.
Yeah, that almost feels like a little bit of that wheel from the wheel of self-sabotage, right? It's like there's the not enough self-love, which creates the opening for the discount. And the asking of the discounts, and then you do it, and then that that causes you to beat up on yourself, which creates even activates the lack of self-love even more, and on you go.
Exactly. Which I think is tied into with the how have I been taught to not love others. Which what came up was I've been taught to withhold love from others who go against what I consider to be important values. It's punishment through withholding love.
Mm-hmm.
But I will do that to myself.
Yes. I just got chills when you said that, right? It's like if we're taught to withhold love from others, if they don't do, you know, whatever we think they should or whatever it is, of course we're going to do that to ourselves as well.
Yeah, I got goosebumps too.
Good.
Yeah.
Glad
all
of that's coming through. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. There are other hands up. I want to get to everybody, but I still have more things I want to share with you guys. So I'm going to lower hands for now, and I'll come back, I promise. Okay. So I know for some of you a lot is being stirred up. The stir up is good. This is so important for us to look at. Where I want to look next are some components to cultivating self-love. for yourself and for your clients. So everything we looked at so far in terms of client work, right, just important for you to know and understand in terms of human behavior and all of that, but also a lot of the questions that I've asked are great for creating awareness for clients. Then you want to take it further. And so obviously there are so many more than just, I'm going to name four components to cultivating self-love. There's so many more. And a lot of what we've looked at already in Sacred Depths are components to cultivating self-love. But I want to give you like four more specific tools today. So the first, and a number of you have already mentioned this, is self-acceptance. And I actually like to call it radical self-acceptance, taken from Tara Brach's radical, she has a book called Radical Acceptance. So adding the word self in there. One of the things that I think is a vital to self-love is radical self-acceptance. And what that means is accepting all of who you are, not just the parts that culture says are acceptable or lovable or worthy, but accepting all of it, every single last part of you, every single little last characteristic. You cannot love what you do not accept. Period. You cannot love that which you deny, period. So if there's a part of you that you're denying, that you're pretending isn't there, you can't love it. And you cannot love that which you fight against and try to make go away, right? We know that from Befriend Your Fear, right? And how often do we fight against parts of ourselves or characteristics or deny that we have certain parts to ourselves or not accept? And by the way, everything that I just said, you know, that you can't love what you don't accept, you can't love that which you deny, and you can't love that which you fight against, all of that is a very, very, very simplified version of understanding how to work with shadow. Very simplified version. Now, this what I'm going to say next is really important. Acceptance doesn't mean that you don't have parts of yourself that you want to change. Acceptance doesn't mean that you don't have parts of yourself that you want to change. And it doesn't mean that you don't work towards changing those parts if they're possible to change, of course. But it does mean that you accept where you're at, whether you can change it or not. And it does mean that you love where you're at, whether you can change it or not. You can love something and want to change it at the same time. And this is, again, like going back to just what we learn from culture. It's like what we learn from culture is that that is an impossibility, that it doesn't add up, that you can both love and accept something and want to change it, right? It has to be one or the other, but that is simply not the truth. And it is a big key to self-love. So, you know, examples, like I have tons of parts of myself that I would like to change, but that I've learned to accept. So, for example, here's something that I think, I mean, if I really tried, I could probably change it, but it's like not going to happen in this lifetime. I'm never going to be the mother that gets her kids to places on time or has fresh baked chocolate chip cookies waiting for them when they get home, or that can play dolls for hours. I get so bored playing those kinds of things, right? It's not in me. It's not who I am. And for a number of years, I hated this about myself. I couldn't accept it, right? Because I had a certain idea of what an ideal mother is and who I was going to be as a mother. And I hated that I just couldn't get myself to do these things. When I finally gave up on the hating and the pushing of trying to change it and just, like, accepted this is not who I am, it not only allowed me to just, you know, accept myself more fully, but it allowed me to become much more comfortable in my role as a mother, to have more confidence in my role as a mother, to enjoy who I am as a mother. And subsequently, even though I still can't play dolls for hours and, you know, all the things, the acceptance of it has allowed me to, like, do things in that direction that I wasn't able to do before. Just a couple little ones, right? Another example is I, you know, I'm a middle-aged woman. I'm going to be 45 next month. And I, like, when I first started to show physically signs of aging, it was devastating to me. And it has so much to do with my genetics and my mother being sick, you know, all the things. But, like, I couldn't accept, right, that I was getting older and that I was showing, you know, getting the wrinkles, like, all the things. I saw other women and I thought it was beautiful. But for me, I just couldn't accept it inside of myself. Now, I have come, not fully, but a long way in learning to accept it. But at the same time, like, I still do my skincare routine and I do the things that I can to, you know, not, I don't want to say change that I'm aging. That's not exactly the right term, but it's not like acceptance means I'm not doing anything, right, to appear like how I, to gracefully age, right? So we want to cultivate a compassionate, accepting relationship to those things that we've been hating, fighting, making the enemy, or denying. That's what radical self-acceptance is. I'll say that again. We want to cultivate a compassionate, accepting relationship to those things which we've been hating, fighting, making the enemy, or denying. Now, that doesn't mean that we, again, that we can't also work towards changing those things. We absolutely can. But the only way we can change them is if we start to accept them first. So all that being said, just, you know, briefly right now, take a moment and jot down what are some of the parts of yourself that you haven't been accepting. The parts of yourself, and I'm going to say your experience too, right? Like your experience in life. It was a revelation for me when I finally came to acceptance that, you know, of the severity of my mother's illness and how it impacts me and what my responsibilities are around that. When I could finally come to acceptance on that fact, it allowed me to make better decisions. It allowed me to not hate on my experience. so much. So what are, just to name a few for right now, what are the parts of yourself or your experience that you haven't been accepting? All right, so creating awareness around all of this is a big and important piece to self-acceptance. But, of course, because these things are so deep and ingrained, you probably want to go deeper. So I want to name a couple of ways to go deeper for yourself or with clients. So number one, even though nevertheless, is a really good tool for parts of yourself or your experience that you haven't been accepting, right? So even though I'm getting older, nevertheless, right? You hopefully remember that back from Myth of Perfection. Another tool to move it into transformation is to practice stating it and writing it from an objective place. So the difference between, oh my gosh, I'm never, I can't get my kids anywhere on time, I suck, right? To, I'm the kind of person up until now who just can't get my kids places on time, right? And then to just write, even just write more on that. To just take the emotion out of it will help bring it to acceptance. Again, that doesn't mean you don't want to change it, but to bring it to acceptance. Some of you might know the therapeutic technique of EMDR. I bring it up because without getting into all of the ins and outs of EMDR, one of the things that EMDR does is it creates a bilateral stimulus. So either visually or through sound, it will activate your left side of your brain and your right side and your left side and your right side. And the idea behind it is that just that alone, the bilateral stimulus is calming, but also if you, while you're having that bilateral stimulation, if you think about something that causes emotional pain, it helps to rewire the neural pathways around it, just through the bilateral. So anyway, EMDR, you need to be trained, and it's a whole thing. But that being said, you can download from iTunes or wherever bilateral music. And I want to recommend experimenting with this. Download bilateral music and do some of this writing that we're talking about. So write about the thing that you can't accept, just write any details that you want about it. While you have to listen with headphones so that you get the right ear, the left ear, the right ear, the left ear. It will take some of the sting out of it. It's something to experiment with. And then, of course, the other part is to more directly engage with the parts of you that you haven't yet accepted. So, for example, from my example, sometimes I have a journaling dialogue or a visualization with the crappy mother inside of me. Not the crappy, but the one who just can't get it together, doesn't do all the things right. I just engage with her. And it helps me integrate that part of myself more. In terms of radical self-acceptance, I want to remind you, and this goes back to energetics of the container, you know this, but I just want to remind you, it's the job of a coach or a practitioner to radically accept your clients, all the things. I have had over the years some clients that have shared with me some things that I have deemed like not okay, you know, that I would have judged. And my job has been to, that doesn't mean that we don't work towards changing if that's something that they want to do, but my job has been to radically accept that client, right? Energy follows energy. And then, of course, in order to accept our clients, we need to accept ourselves. So that's first component, radical self-acceptance. Second component that you can work with and play with when it comes to self-love for yourself, for clients, is back to this idea that if you are a living being, you are of inherent value and deserve love and wonder and awe. So we can call this component connection to spirit and connection to the sacredness of life. And I know at the outset this might sound woo maybe to some of you, but this is actually, I think, a profound in a very grounded way. When I notice that I am not in a place of loving myself, or like, you know, just quite honestly, when I notice I'm a place of self-hatred, one of the things that can help begin to shift that for me pretty quickly is to return to the awareness of the wonder and the sacredness of life. Excuse my language, but, you know, like bringing myself to the place of holy fucking shit, like being alive is magical and sacred, and I am alive, and therefore I am magical and sacred. It is a wondrous miracle that I'm here. I am inherently valuable simply because of the magic of being alive. I hope this makes sense, what I'm saying. Like, again, this is kind of profound, I think. You know, and something that, one of the things that can really support in that is connecting to nature. Right? So I don't right now have any pets, but like if you have a pet, focusing in on your pet, your cat, your dog, whatever it is, like, oh my gosh, like here's this living thing. How, like the wonder of life, right? If you have children in your life or just any other human being, you can go out into nature and just take a moment to connect to the magic of the grass growing or whatever it is, and then understand that that's not separate from you, that you're a part of that, it can really help shift perspective. Now, back to neuroscience, it'll only shift it for a second if you only think about it for a second, and then you'll go back to, you know, all your old ways of thinking. You know, if this is a tool that you want to use it persistently and consistently. And what I'd say is, like, it's about the thoughts, like, oh, my gosh, right, part of this magic, but it's also about the feeling. So let's just do this for a moment. Take a moment and close your eyes. And however this prompt wants you, wherever it takes you, let it take you, like, connecting to your body with the magic and wonder of nature and of life. Feel in your body that you are part of this, that you are part of life. Your simple, your existence is magical simply because your heart beats and your lungs breathe. And from this place, connecting into the magic of who you are, not because of what you do or any characteristic, but simply because. If you believe in any kind of God or spirit, or this can even be nature, feel yourself connected to something bigger than you are, or to someone else, or to your ancestors, whatever it is for you. Just see if you can, in your body, feel the wonder of this. You can open your eyes. So I love to use this as a tool when I catch myself, you know. When I catch myself not, you know, beating up on myself or not being loving or whatever it is to really remember the wonder and awe, like that I am inherently worthy and valuable. Because, end sentence right there, right? Now, the other piece of this component is if you believe in higher power or God or spirit, you know, whatever it is, spirit can become a corrective and healing stand-in for the loving parent. Spirit can become the corrective and healing stand-in for maybe the not-so-loving parents in your life, or the old ideas of a not-so-loving God in your life, right? So sometimes, for better or worse, whether our parents meant it or not, we didn't feel full love, right? Like full acceptance of ourselves, love, like our parents felt that we were worthy, you know, all the things. Spirit can be a stand-in for that. And also in certain religious beliefs, you know, sometimes God or spirit is not so loving, or harsh or judgmental, you know, whatever it is, we can reinvent spirit in that way. And we can use spirit as a tool to remind us of how sacred and precious and worthy and lovable we are, right? So cultivating that relationship, you know, whether it's spirit or nature or whatever it is, but to really cultivate that relationship. I oftentimes write letters to myself from spirit, and just those letters are loving, you know, like for me, it's the goddess. She tells me how amazing I am and how worthy I am and how precious I am. And I just write it all, you know, I write all the things that I needed to hear that I never fully heard. I just write it all. And it's a practice for me. Sometimes I do it more regularly than others. It makes a big difference. So that's a tool that you can use for yourself and for clients. And there's one other piece about this I wanted to say. Oh, well, I kind of already said it, but spend time in nature, just like spending time in nature and being in wonder and awe, again, of what being alive means. If you can put yourself, see yourself as a daughter or a son or a child of the earth, you can be part of that wonder and awe. All right. Two more components that I want to make sure we get to today of self-love. So self-care is the next one. There is a direct relationship and correlation between self-love and self-care. The more that you deeply and truly take care of yourself, the easier it is to love yourself. When I say take care of yourself, I don't mean like checking off the to-do list boxes, like, you know, I took the yoga class, you know, like if it's a have to or you're checking off the box, that's not deep self-care. But really what I'm talking about is like things that deeply nourish you. When you nourish yourself, number one, it's an act of self-love. And by the way, I know you guys know this, but I want you to take this in like 10 times level more deeply than you already know this, because we all know this, and then we all pay lip service to this to some extent, right? When you deeply nourish yourself, when you take real care of yourself. Number one, it's an act of self-love, but number two, the environment that you create, the impact of the nourishment when you get nourished, it is that is that much easier to then love yourself. It directly impacts your level of self-love. It is very hard to love yourself when you're neglecting yourself, when you're not taking care of you. And you know, just to kind of like extend this for a moment, there's also a direct correlation between self-care and worthiness. If we don't feel worthy, it's very hard to give ourselves good care. And then there's something in it back to our module about time, like receiving, right? So oftentimes if there is a gap in self-care, there's issues around money or time also. So there's two types of self-care that are directly related to self-love, kind of like two buckets. One is nourishment and one is pleasure. I just share a little bit about each. So nourishment, as I just said, it's about deeply nourishing yourself so that you can be in a state of well-being. Deeply nourishing yourself so that you can be in a state of well-being. Have you guys noticed, I mean, if you like give yourself a spa day or if you prepare just a really nourishing meal, or take the time to take a bath and just give yourself space. When you do that, it makes it easier to love yourself. It just simply does, right? So are you nourishing yourself? And let's just do a quick assessment and go down some things. And you just, on a scale of 1 to 5, just rate yourself on each of these things. So sleep, right? I see that as a big component of nourishment. And I know a lot of us have trouble sleeping, but are you doing everything you can to create an environment inside of yourself and outside of yourself for sleep, getting that adequate amount of sleep for you? Scale of 1 to 5, 5 is you're excellent at it, 1 not so well. Eating well and keeping your blood sugar balanced. Where are you with that? Hydrating yourself, drinking enough water. If you have supplements or vitamins, taking them consistently. Scale of 1 to 5, where are you with that? Exercise. Honoring your pace and your rhythm on any particular day. That's an aspect of self-care and nourishment. Where are you with that? Taking breaks. Scale of 1 to 5. Where are you with that? Grooming. For a long time, I didn't really get that this was an aspect of self-care because I never saw my mother groom herself. And this doesn't mean that, you know, you have to be so involved with how you look, but is this, you know, and by the way, each of the things that I mentioned, it may or may not be important for you. You can consider for yourself, but I find for me, like, when I actually brush my hair, you know, like when I take care and I get haircuts when I need to get my haircut, get my nails done if I need to get my nails, like any kind of grooming, right? It's a piece of nourishing myself and taking care of myself. Wearing clothing that you like is another thing to consider. Giving yourself soul time, scale of 1 to 5. It's a little hard in COVID, but massage and touch. Right? And then what else? You can insert, you know, your own categories here. So how well are you nourishing yourself? Can you pick an area that maybe you recognize would be really important for you and start to move towards that? And we don't have time for this now. I'll add this into the Facebook group, but I'll just kind of toss it to you right now. Oftentimes with self-care, there can be a lot of beliefs around self-care, and a lot of shadow pieces can come up. I call it the martyr and selfish one shadow axis. You know, either you can end up being the martyr and, you know, you're just doing stuff for others or your kids or your parents or, you know, whatever, and you just don't take any care of yourself. And then the other extreme is this fear of, like, being too selfish, right? And, like, oh, you know, like, self-involved because of self-care. So if you are noticing, you know, as we just did that quick assessment, that you aren't taking good care, you aren't nourishing yourself, you aren't taking good care, you may want to look at some of your beliefs around what it means to nourish yourself. The other component of self-care, so there's nourishment, and then I just want to mention is pleasure, right? When we doing things that are pleasurable to us, which can coincide with those nourishment pieces, but doing things that are pleasurable to us is actually a very important aspect of self-care. So if you're someone that denies yourself pleasure in your life, you're probably not taking good enough care of yourself, and that's impacting your level of self-love. And then last component, for now, and I know I'm rushing through the end here, I'm going to kind of give you guys some supplements around this, but just the last component is, and this might be the cleanest for all of you, but something for you to think about, and particularly for clients, is who you choose to hang around, right? So back to what are you tolerating from others? A great way to move forward in your self-love journey is to do a detox of either people that are not loving you as you deserve to be loved, or to set some serious boundaries, make some shifts in those relationships. Okay, I know there's a lot here. I'm going to give you guys some homework, and then I'll open up for Q&A and reflections, anything that you guys need on all of this. So first of all, just take a moment, write down what are you really taking away for yourself from our call today? And please share and post on it. Let me give you homework, and then I'll open up for shares. So first of all, if you're working with clients, make a list of your clients this week and just assess each one of them through the lens of what we looked at today. And, you know, make your best guess. Of course, you never know until you speak to a client, but it's good to kind of just think through some of this. So for each of the clients, where are they at in terms of their level of self-love? And then which of the components that we looked at would be a useful tool? And then you may want to integrate that into your work with them over the next week or two. Letters from the universe, letters from spirit, if that really grabbed you as I was speaking about it, I want to encourage you to start a practice of writing love letters to yourself from spirit, from God, from nature. Another piece of homework is to start to shift one of the nourishment pieces that we looked at as an act of self-love, or the relationship detox piece. Okay. So I know we're at time, but I'll stay on the line if there are any questions or reflections, anything you need before we wrap for today. Star 2. Suzanne.
Hey, Joanna. The bit that I raised my hand about earlier that stood out was the question, what's below the surface? And the first thing that came up was just another thing I can beat myself up for not doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, just what we covered just now, and I think it might be related, and I can't see it, so I'd love your insight. Because when you speak about the job of the coach, accepting your clients, you're radically accepting them where they are. And then someone else mentioned, and I can see it in myself too, deeply discounting or, how that's not honouring yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then who you choose to hang around, what are you tolerating and setting boundaries? I suppose for me, and it's obviously going to need to do some more journaling on it, but I feel like if I'm setting the boundaries, I'm not radically accepting people where they are.
Okay, I'm glad you're bringing this up. This is important. So there's a difference, again, between acceptance and changing the things that aren't working. And you can do both at the same time, even with someone else. So in other words, if you have someone Well, why don't you give us an example of somebody who would fall into this category and what they're doing?
Well, it's aptly timed. So I run a membership program that I have clear guidelines about the level of contact with me, because it's a group thing. And I have been letting that lapse, as in people have been private messaging me and I have responded, and it's kind of, in some cases, become private message coaching. So I did a video in the group and I, you know, owned my place in that. Like, it wasn't to blame anybody, but like, I hadn't held this firm boundary. And most people, I was actually really moved by the response. They were like, you know, this is what leadership's about. Like, it was amazing. But there was one who was quite upset by this and has since left. And I suppose it's me like beating myself up about like maybe I could have handled that better, or you know, like if that self, not self-loving talk that you have, that, you know, if I'd been better, this wouldn't have happened.
Got it. Okay. So first of all, with this person, what's the part of her that needs your love and acceptance? Even if you're going to set a boundary, what's the part of her that you're judging right now, or not loving, or not accepting?
I guess the needy part.
Yeah. Good. So the needy part of her, it's true, like, you need to set the boundary. But that doesn't also mean that you can't have deep compassion and love. That's what she's experiencing right now, and that's where she's at. So first, let's just start with that. See if you can, like, see her in front of you, or just feel her in front of you with her neediness, you know, and just open your heart, like, have compassion for it. Can you feel that a little bit?
Yes.
Okay, so from that place of having compassion for her and acceptance of her neediness, what are you accepting and having compassion for inside of yourself?
I can see, like, where I don't voice my neediness. Like, I don't ask a question in fear of stepping over someone else's boundaries. Like, I don't let other people, enforce is too strong a word, but display or give me their boundary because I'm fearful that I'm too much.
Yeah. Beautiful, good. So just continue to really see and accept that part of yourself. And then from this place of having this compassion for you and having this compassion for her, what's the next step that you want to take with her?
Being appreciative, because I can see that side of myself now, and I also feel a bit like relief, because that's not my job to work out what other people's boundaries are, but I can accept and appreciate them.
Yeah.
Like, it links into what you were talking about with the shadow and the martyr and the selfish one.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm so fearful of being the selfish one that I go into the martyr, and then I'm not happy either way.
Yeah, exactly. And one last question for now, your needy one, what's the healthy, if there was a healthier expression of your needy one, right, that's not martyr and not selfish, what would the healthiest expression of that be?
The very first thought that comes up is the question, like the curious one.
Yeah, I love that. Just got chills when you said that. So I would engage with your curious, the part of your curious one, and see what that one wants to share and express. And really, like, remember her when these feelings come up.
Thank you, Joanna. That's great.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Okay. All right, everybody. I'd love for you to post your takeaways. Let me know what's come through, what you're seeing, thinking about all of you. And I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
The moderator has left the conference.